This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We'll begin our hour of old-time radio crime with Sherlock Holmes this week. We'll hear the adventure of the London Tower from December 12th, 1948. After that, it's Juniper Lane from Let George Do It. That episode aired January 16th, 1950.
From New York City, the makers of Clipper Craft Clothes for Men and more than 1,200 leading retail stores from coast to coast present Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's immortal character, the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes, starring John Stanley. This week's story, The Adventure of London Tower.
Holmes, the official police have been swarming through the Tower of London here for 2 days, and they've found nothing.
That is because they've met their match, Watson. The thief who engineered this extraordinary crime is a man worthy of my own mettle.
Yes, but where is he? How did he escape from the Tower?
He didn't, Watson.
Oh, but why, that's absurd, Holmes. He can't still be here.
Can't he, Watson? Listen to that.
Holmes, the killer. He is here and he's struck again.
Yes, quick. Down these stairs. After him.
We're at the door of Dr. John Watson's study and we're about to hear another of his adventures with the fabulous Sherlock Holmes.
Well, good evening, Mr. Harris.
Good evening, Dr. Watson. Hard at work on your memoirs as usual, I see. Well, which one is it this time?
Well, tonight, Mr. Harris, I'm able to reveal for the first time an extraordinary adventure, the details of which for many years were shrouded in official secrecy. It is only recently, and by dint of constant appeal to Scotland Yard and Downing Street itself, that I was given permission finally to reveal the facts of this case.
Well, now you've stirred my curiosity, Dr. Watson. What is this story called?
I call it The Adventure of London Tower, and I promise you an interesting evening. But now, Mr. Harris, I know you have an interesting story to give us on Clippercroft Clothes.
Interesting indeed, Dr. Watson. And, madam, I'm about to tell our listeners about sensational values in men's clothing.
Well, Mr. Harris, my husband says that a really good suit costs him a small fortune.
Well, obviously, your husband hasn't heard about those luxurious suits that bear the famous Clippercraft label and cost only $40 and $45.
Not really.
Mm-hmm. And what's more, even the superb worsted suits with the famous Clippercraft label cost only $45.
Well, I don't mean to be inquisitive, but...
Oh, you want to know how Clippercraft does it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, more than 1,200 fine independent stores from coast to coast concentrate their immense purchasing power for fabulous savings in production and distribution. Naturally, those savings are passed on to you.
Yes, but I have to be convinced.
Well, you can convince yourself just by comparing Clippercraft with clothes selling for many dollars more. And now, Dr. Watson, what about this adventure of London Tower?
Well, Mr. Harris, it was one of those cases which, if Holmes had not lived to solve it, might have dealt a shattering blow to the empire itself. Holmes and I first became aware of an extraordinary crisis when we were aroused from our beds early one morning by a personage no less than the Prime Minister himself, Lord Bellinger. But the chain of events had already started the afternoon before, when a beef-eater guide named Wilkes led a party of sightseers through the Wakefield Tower, which, as you know, is one of the many towers which go to make up that great conglomeration of buildings called the Tower of London.
And there you've seen them, ladies and gentlemen. The fabulous crown jewels worth £5 million. The imperial state crown, the queen's consort crown, the anointing spoon, the king's scepter with the Star of Africa, largest cut diamond in the world, the uncut ruby in the crown, given to the Black Prince by Pedro the Cruel and worn by Henry at Agincourt. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we'll move on to the White Tower. Now, on our way, we'll pass the outer ward, the yeoman jailer's house, and... one moment, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I seem to have a straggler back there in the treasure room. Beg pardon, sir.
What is it, Guy?
What are you doing back here? Why haven't you come along with the others?
Oh, just admiring the crown jewels here under this iron-barred case.
That's as maybe, sir. But we can't allow any of the sightseers to lag behind. Not here, anyhow. rules, you know.
Yes, of course. I quite understand, Guy. It's just that I cannot take my eyes from these jewels. Look at them shine. The symbols of empire. The pride of kings and the joy of queens. They're beautiful. Beautiful.
Come in.
Yeoman Albert Hodgkins of the Tower Guard reporting, Major.
Oh, yes, Hodgkins. At ease.
Yes.
Hodgkins, Major of London Tower and Chief Constable, I seem to be having trouble with my yeoman warders lately. Let me see. You stand watch over the crown jewels with Yeoman Wilson, do you not?
Yes.
Quite. But it seems that Wilson is ill and confined to his quarters. I shall therefore assign another man to stand guard with you.
Who will that be, Major Markham?
A new man to the Yeoman of the Guard, Hodgkins. His name is Digby, and he comes to us with an excellent military record. He'll report directly to you at the Treasure Room tonight.
Very good, sir.
And, Hodgkins, one more thing.
Yes, Major?
This man Digby was shot up a bit in the Afghan War. They did some rather crude surgery to his face. I'm counting on you to exhibit no particular reaction. Do you understand?
Of course, Major.
Very good. That'll be all, Hodgkins.
So these are the crown jewels, eh, Hodgkins?
That's them, all right, Digby.
Blimey. I was in His Majesty's service a long time, but I never stood a watch like this. Now, what's this here crown?
That's Sir Edward's crown, made for the coronation of Charles II.
And this big diamond?
Oh, that's the Koh-i-Noor diamond. Used to belong to the Raja of Lahore, that did. They're going to bring it to Windsor Castle.
Oh, are they, Hodgkins?
I said they were, didn't I?
That's where you're wrong.
What do you mean?
This Hodgkins.
No! No! Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, you will forgive me if I have interrupted your slumber in the dead of night like this, but the magnitude of this crime, the immediate need of investigation...
Quite, Lord Bellinger. Dr. Watson and I are at your service.
General, Your Lordship, Holmes and I never expected a personal visit of the Prime Minister of England to our humble quarters here at Baker Street.
Yes, yes, Dr. Watson. In the ordinary course of events, I should have summoned you to Downing Street, but there is no time to waste. There is a terrible urgency to this whole fantastic affair.
Oh, I should say so. Crown jewels stolen from the Tower of London. Tower guard murdered. By Jove, what cheek. No one's ever tried that before.
On the contrary, Watson, they have. In the reign of Charles II, an Irishman named Thomas Blood purloined the jewels and almost succeeded in getting them out of London before he was apprehended. But enough of that. Lord Bellinger, a question or two, if you please.
Yes, Mr. Holmes?
Is the government yet aware of this loss?
Only the highest circles. The royal family has been notified and the inner cabinet. We are striving to keep the affair a secret as long as possible. You must understand why.
Quite.
The crown jewels are priceless.
They are indeed, Dr. Watson. And more than in just a material sense. Indeed, they are the symbols of empire. They hold our far-flung dominions and colonies together. I need not tell you the shattering impact of this news, both at home and abroad. Mr. Holmes.
Yes, Lord Bellinger.
I beg of you. Indeed, I plead with you to lend your great talents to this affair. If your genius has ever burned brightly, let it burn now. The crown jewels must be recovered at any cost.
You may rest assured, sir, that we shall leave no stone unturned. Now then, as I understand it, the official police have been notified.
Yes, Scotland Yard was notified immediately and threw a cordon around the whole tower. The tower wardens have locked all gates and entries. No one can enter and no one can leave. All gates have been sealed.
Good.
I might add that all personnel has been sworn to secrecy so as not to foment public unrest.
I see. Watson?
Yes, Holmes?
You'd better get dressed and be off to the Tower of London at once. So you're Overbury, the chief warder.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. Major Markham, the chief constable, asked me to conduct Dr. Watson and yourself to the treasure room the moment you arrived.
Nothing's been disturbed over by this?
No, Dr. Watson, nothing. We left the corpse of poor Hodgkins just as it was. Here we are.
Holmes, this poor chap was stabbed.
Yes, Watson.
The blade was driven home by a powerful blow. Pierced the heart wall.
Yes, true, Watson, true. But at the moment, I'm more interested in this smashed display case. Note the way one of the bars was filed through and bent back. Interesting.
What's interesting, sir?
The thief, if I recall the articles exhibited here, took an amazingly large number of these valuables. They must have been difficult to hide and bulky to carry. Overbred.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
What time this morning did you discover the theft?
Why, about 4 o'clock, sir.
What did you do after that?
I immediately ordered the alarm and notified Major Markham. He was just finishing his bath.
Bath? Well, Watson, there's nothing more to be seen here. Now then, Overbury.
Yes, sir.
Be good enough to take us to the Chief Constable, Major Markham.
Yes, sir. Come with me, gentlemen. The Major is occupying temporary quarters just over the water gate.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, we're at our wits' end here at the Tower. It's incredible, gentlemen, incredible that a thief could loot the crown jewels and escape from the Tower as quickly as you please.
What makes you think he escaped, Major Markham?
Oh, come now, Holmes. You don't think the beggar is still hiding somewhere in the Tower area with half of Scotland Yard and all the garrison swarming about the premises?
My dear Watson, I prefer to remain skeptical until I have all the facts at hand. The Tower embraces a large area.
True, Mr. Holmes, true. But I assure you, we've searched every nook and corner of the Tower area. We've gone through the White Tower, the Bloody Tower, the Beecham and Wakefield Tower, where the treasure room itself is located. And not a sign of the thief.
Seems to me we must resign ourselves to the fact that the burglar may be miles away by now, Holmes.
Yes, perhaps, Watson, perhaps. Major Markham, a question.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
It's obvious that this new yeoman guard you employed, this man Digby, is responsible for this fantastic crime.
Undoubtedly.
I presume you examined his credentials before you took him on.
Certainly. They seem quite in order. Good military record and honorable discharge.
Forged, no doubt?
No doubt. However, we do have a clue.
Indeed?
What clue?
The man's face. It was bloated, blotched, kind of dead chalk white, puffy in appearance. Indeed, I found it very unpleasant to look at.
Well, Joe Holmes, if we ever come across the beggar, he should be easy to identify.
Sure, Watson, if we ever come across him. This vandal is a man of some parts, my dear fellow. He executes the most fabulous crime of the century, vanishes into thin air, disappears through stone masonry, so to speak, and all without a trace. Major Markham.
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
I should like to question the Tower guides at once. Now then, Wilkes, your duty is to take sightseers through the treasure room in Wakefield Tower.
Yes, Mr. Holmes. And I might say that I noticed one mighty suspicious bloke among the crowd yesterday afternoon.
Indeed?
What do you mean, Wilkes?
Well, Dr. Watson, this here gentleman was loitering around the crown jewels. I had to go back and get him to move on. The fella couldn't tear himself away. But there was something about him, a look about him.
What kind of look?
Well, he had a high, bald forehead and a big, thin nose and a thin face, like a knife almost, and a big, drooping moustache.
Wilkes, one moment. This man's eyes, what color were they?
Oh, Holmes, what the devil?
Please, Watson. Try to think, Wilkes. What color were this man's eyes?
Why, they were blue, Mr. Holmes, and the eyelids drooped a little.
Aha! Watson, it's he, I'm sure of it.
Dash it all, Holmes, who?
I prefer not to mention his name until I'm sure beyond all reasonable doubt. But he's certainly capable of a fantastic plot like this, and the high stakes are much to his liking. Watson, if this man is indeed our quarry, this genius of crime, it'll take a near miracle to recover those crown jewels and restore them to their rightful place.
Well, Dr. Watson, so far it's been some adventure.
Yes, Mr. Harris. I consider it unique among my memoirs.
Yes, unique. Say, you've given me just the word I need when it comes to Clippercraft clothes, Dr. Watson. Now, getting back to your husband, madam.
Yes, I've got to be getting back to him, but, well, how do we distinguish a genuine Clippercraft?
Well, how do you determine that silver is sterling? By the mark of sterling, of course. No suit or coat is a genuine Clippercraft unless it bears the renowned Clippercraft label. That Clippercraft label is your proof of quality and value.
But what about Clippercraft coats, Mr. Harris?
Ah, truly expensive-looking Clippercraft top coats and overcoats are the sensation of the nation at only $40 to $47.50. And speaking of sensations, just wait till your husband sees Clippercraft's handsome new zipper-lining top coats.
Where can we shop for these wonderful Clippercraft clothes?
In your very own community, at the friendly independent store that sells Clippercraft clothes.
Well, if they look as good as you make them sound.
Uh-huh, they really do. That's why men who know insist on Clippercraft clothes bearing the Clippercraft label. So be sure to visit the Clippercraft store in your city.
These leading stores in the metropolitan area are proud to add their names to Clippercraft in your suits, top coats, and overcoats. In Manhattan, John Wanamaker Men's Store, Broadway at 8th and 67 Liberty Street. Saks 34th, Broadway at 34th. In Brooklyn, Abraham and Strauss. In Newark, New Jersey, Boulevard Men's Shop, Kresge Newark. And in Jamaica, the B&B Clothes Shop, 16408 Jamaica Avenue.
And now, Dr. Watson, you were relating to us the adventure of London Tower.
Yes, Mr. Harris, I was. As Holmes continued to question the beef-eater guide sharply, I saw that Holmes's face was like a mask. His gray eyes narrowed, and I knew he was training every one of his brilliant faculties to trap and finally bring to heel the mysterious and formidable criminal of London Tower. Finally, as Holmes and I were ascending the steps between the Bloody Tower and the guardhouse, Holmes said,
Watson, it's my considered opinion after a careful examination of the facts that the crown jewels are still somewhere here in the tower.
What?
Precisely. And I'm positive that the thief is still in the tower as well.
Well, Holmes, for once I must disagree with you. Why, the official police have been swarming through the whole tower area for days.
True. But even if they find the thief, they'll never recognize him.
Oh, dash it, Holmes, what are you driving at? The chief constable of the tower, Major Markham, clearly identified the bogus guard and killer Digby as having a bloated, puffy, white face.
Quite. But it's the thin-faced man with the cold blue eyes, the tourist with the drooping moustache, who's the key to this extraordinary affair.
Oh, perhaps, Holmes. At this point, my dear Holmes, I'm thoroughly confused. As to the jewels themselves, you said they're still in the tower.
And with good reason, Watson. You observed that several of the heavier pieces, crowns, scepters, maces, and so forth, were missing from the glass display case.
Yes, but what of it?
The thief would need a large bag, indeed a sack, to carry those bulky items. It's doubtful whether he could have slipped by the outer garrison guard without being examined.
Holmes, what was that?
Just a minute, Watson. Listen.
Ah! Holmes, a scream. It came from the armory room. Someone's running
there. Watson, the killer. He struck again.
Holmes, it's the Chief Warder, Overbury.
Yes.
He's dead. Stabbed through the body.
Yes, quite. But note this suit of armor. It's been tipped from its standing position in the wall and fallen to the stone floor. That was the metallic sound we heard.
But I don't understand.
Uh-huh.
What is it, Holmes? What are you picking up from the floor?
Observe, Watson.
Well, it's a diamond.
Exactly. It broke off from one of the crown pieces, no doubt, when this suit of armor crashed to the floor.
Then, Holmes, the thief concealed the crown jewels in this hollow suit of armor.
Precisely. It's obvious that he was surprised in the act of recovering his loot by the chief warder here.
Then the crown jewels are still in the tower, Holmes. The garrison is guarding every gate and entrance.
Quite. Our man has a very real problem of getting the valuables out of the tower. And therein, Watson, lies our hope of success.
Holmes, shouldn't we rouse the tower garrison? The killer was here just a moment ago.
No, my dear fellow, it'd be quite useless. The tower's a very large place, and if I know our man, he'll be much too clever to leave himself exposed for very long. Come, Watson.
Where to, Holmes?
We had better notify the chief constable of this new tragedy.
Major Markham doesn't seem to be in, Holmes. Door's ajar.
In that case, suppose we go in and wait. Rather an impressive view from this barred window here, don't you think, Watson?
Yes, Holmes.
We seem to be just above the outer wall. The River Thames just beyond the wall. Must say, however, I find this panorama rather depressing. These gray towers, Watson, have hidden many a shriek of torture. Many a royal prisoner has languished in its dungeons. Many others came through the traitor's gate and thence to the headsman's axe. Hello, what's this?
Holmes, what are you...
Watson, note the bars on this window. Here, near the base.
Well, they've been partially filed through.
Precisely, and for a very good reason. It might be well to make a detailed study of this room while... Uh-huh.
What is it, Holmes?
Note, Watson, observe on this wash basin.
Dash it, Holmes. I don't see anything.
Don't you, Watson? Use your eyes. Here is a tiny globule of paraffin, not much larger than the head of a pin.
Paraffin?
Quite.
Well, what of it?
Everything, Watson, everything. This tiny globule of paraffin is the hinge of this entire case. It clarifies the riddle of the bogus guard Digby.
Holmes, what the devil are you talking
obvious,
about?
Obvious, my dear fellow, obvious.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Major Markleby, we're just waiting for you.
Major, I trust that you are aware that your chief warder, Overbury, has just been murdered.
Yes, Mr. Holmes, I am. One of my men found his body in the armory room. We are thoroughly combing the various towers at this moment, and we've doubled the guard at all gates and entrances.
Excellent, Major, excellent. But you must go even further than that. The crown jewels are still somewhere in London Tower.
What? You're sure of that, Mr. Holmes?
I am indeed. The killer had hidden his loot in a suit of armor in the armory room. He was surprised by Overbury, the chief warder, and murdered him. No doubt our thief has hidden the loot elsewhere.
Yes, but Holmes, how is he going to get it out of the tower? Every gate and entrance is guarded.
Yes, quite, Watson, quite. Perhaps we can tree our quarry by closing in with a rigid room-by-room search. You have the personnel to conduct this kind of search, Major Markham?
Of course, and I shall order it to begin immediately.
Excellent. Come, Watson.
Where to, Holmes?
First, to Baker Street. There's a bit of research I must do there, specifically on a certain new discovery in Vienna. After that, we shall go to Downing Street. It's high time we gave the Prime Minister a report on our findings.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, I have left an emergency meeting of the Inner Cabinet to see you, and I pray that you have good news.
Be of good cheer, Lord Bellinger. We've made considerable progress. I'm almost positive of the identity of the vandal who stole the jewels.
Ah, but the jewels, the crown jewels, where are they? It is imperative that they be recovered soon, Mr. Holmes. Already rumors are sweeping London. The news has somehow leaked out, in spite of the fact that the newspapers have not printed a word of the story. The Foreign Secretary and the Home Secretary are in a state of agitation, not to mention the Bank of England itself. We must find the crown jewels, Mr. Holmes, and soon we must.
Patience, Lord Bellinger, patience. If I'm not wrong in my analysis of events yet to come, we shall close this case and recover the crown jewels tonight.
Tonight, Holmes, you mean you know where they're hidden?
No, but I expect someone else will find them for me. And when he does, you and I will be waiting to receive them.
You mean inside the tower?
On the contrary, Watson. I mean outside the tower.
Oh, it's 2 o'clock, Holmes.
Yes.
Why the deuce are we standing outside this tower? No one can get in or out without being challenged by a guard. Anyway, it's cold enough out here by the river wall to chill the marrow of a man's bones. Why this tower watch in the dead of night?
Because, Watson, I expect the purloiner of the crown jewels to put in an appearance at any moment. Like the cornered fox, the hounds close in, and he must break away before it's too late.
But, dash it, I don't understand her.
Watson.
Eh? What is it?
Look at that window, high in the tower.
Oh, there's a man crawling through the window under that small rampart.
Yes, and note, there's a bag slung over his shoulder.
Yes, you're right, sir. But the juice is...
Watson, quick, shrink back into the shadow here.
What is the point?
Someone just lit a match over there at the far end of the river wall. Obviously a signal.
You mean he's a Confederate?
He is indeed, and more than that. He's the brains behind this extraordinary coup. One of the cruelest and most brilliant criminals of a generation, Colonel Sebastian Moran.
What? Colonel Moran? But look, look, Holmes, on the rampart. He's flinging the sack out into the river.
Yes.
It's landed in the water.
Yes, sir. Watson, look over there at Colonel Moran. He has a rifle.
Yes, he's pointing it at the man at the...
Ah!
He's been hit. He's falling, Holmes.
Ah!
Quick, Watson, after him.
Hulk Moran!
Hulk!
Holmes, he's raising his gun!
Quick, your revolver! Good shot, Watson. You winged him in the arm. He dropped his gun.
Hulk Moran! He's running along the river wall. Oh, I missed him, curse it. It's this darkness here. Holmes is going to dive into the Thames from the wall. There he goes!
Well, Holmes, I'm afraid Colonel Moran made good his escape.
Yes, Watson swam underwater, no doubt, and escaped in the darkness. Man has a charmed life. Well, here we are at the spot where the sack was flung into the river from the tower window.
There's that heavy sack. How can we possibly...
When they drag the Thames for it, Watson, I have no doubt they'll find the sack filled to the brim with the crown jewels of England.
By Jove! So the man in the tower...
Was Major Markham, obviously.
Major Markham?
Yes.
He murdered Hodgkins and the chief warder and stole the crown jewels.
He did indeed. But he was only a secondary factor, an accomplice. It was the fertile brain of Colonel Sebastian Moran which hatched this clever scheme.
And Moran shot Markham because he didn't want to share in the spoil.
Precisely. Once Markham had delivered the crown jewels, Colonel Moran had no further use for him. Dropping the bag through the window was obviously a method for getting the loot out of the guarded tower. It'd be easy enough later for Colonel Moran to recover the sack with grappling iron.
Oh, Dashiell Holmes, I confess I'm confused. The villain, as I understood it, was a bogus guard named Digby. The blotchy, puffed-up white face.
Precisely, Watson. But Digby and Major Markham were one and the same man.
What?
An ingenious trick of double identity. You remember the glove deal of paraffin we found in Markham's quarters?
Oh, yes.
It came from a hypodermic needle. A new medical technique recently discovered in Vienna by injecting hot paraffin into the face. It's possible to change the facial contours and the shape of the features completely.
The deuce, you say?
Thus, Markham transformed himself to a puffy, white-faced guard and dubbed himself Digby. He came out of his office, killed Hodgkins, stole the crown jewels and hid them. Then he returned to his quarters and took a hot bath at the rather unusual hour of 4 o'clock in the morning.
Holmes, you mean the hot bath?
Quite. The paraffin oozes out of the pores when subjected to warm vapor and hot water. And by this method, Digby became Markham again.
And all the while, the official police were looking for a puffy, white-faced man.
Yes, no wonder they didn't find him, since he never really existed.
Holmes, I must congratulate you on a brilliant piece of work. Well, I suppose now we shall inform the Prime Minister that the crown jewels lie at this spot, at the bottom of the Thames, and can easily be recovered.
Exactly. But for myself, the case is not yet closed.
Well, what do you mean, Holmes?
Colonel Sebastian Moran is still at large. But someday, we shall meet again. And next time, Watson, I promise you we shall settle our account for good.
And did Holmes settle that account finally, Dr. Watson?
He did indeed, Mr. Harris. He finally brought Moran down in another adventure, the case of the empty house. I might add that Colonel Sebastian Moran was considered the best rifle shot in India, and his feat in shooting Major Markham off that tower rampart was an exceptional bit of marksmanship.
Well, Dr. Watson, it's certainly been an exciting case. And now, can you tell us something about next week's story?
Next week, Mr. Harris, I shall relate to you the famous adventure of the Speckled Band. It concerns an iron safe, a whistle in the night, and a bed that couldn't be moved.
The makers of Clipper Craft Clothes and more than 1,200 stores from coast to coast have brought you another in the new series of broadcasts featuring the world's most famous detective, Sherlock Holmes. Our stories are based upon the character Sherlock Holmes, created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and the program is produced and directed by Basil Lochran. Sherlock Holmes is played by John Stanley, Dr. Watson by George Selznick. This week's story was written by Max Ehrlich, with special music by Alfred Berman. If you don't know your Clippercraft dealer, write Clippercraft, 200 Fifth Avenue, New York City. Be sure to listen next week to Sherlock Holmes in The Adventure of the Speckled Band. Cy Harris speaking for Clipper Craft Clothes. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
In just a moment, you'll hear Behind the Front Page. For non-stop service to Jacksonville, call Eastern Airlines. Fly to Jacksonville non-stop in 3 hours and 11 minutes. For immediate reservations, call Eastern Airlines. This is WOR, New York.
Personal notice, danger's my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details. Standard Oil Company of California, on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West, invites you to Let George Do It. Juniper Lane, another adventure of George Valentine.
I am writing this most tardily, I fear. Christmas has come and gone, and the new year, too. But perhaps the trembling of my hand will explain it. I could not write before this or drop by. The two faithful guardians of my confinement, the butler and the maid, will bear witness to the degree of my suffering. A suffering that is so prevalent among us here in Juniper Lane. Yes, I shamefacedly admit that my writing to you has been delayed by a common cold. And so, my good Aunt Bess, please accept my apologies and know that the pair of brown wristlets which you so thoughtfully knitted for me as a Christmas gift were most gratefully received.
Huh? What's all that, Brooksy?
That's what the letter says, George.
Wristlets?
Those old-fashioned things like a glove with no fingers. Keep your wrists warm.
Oh, yeah. Well, who wrote this letter? What's the signature?
There isn't any.
Heading?
Isn't any.
Huh. Well, pretty simple, I guess. Just a mix-up of mail. One thing I know. I'm not Aunt Beth.
Oh, I thought you'd enjoy it, that's all. Now we can get back to our own knitting. The next letter...
Hey, don't tear that thing up.
Why not?
The envelope, let me see. George Valentine, proper address. So whoever wrote this thank you note also wrote to me. Then got the envelopes mixed.
Absent-minded professor, maybe. He sounds sort of stuffy.
Yeah, that's probably a man, all right. And the words he uses, he's sure not young. Butler and maid. Might be wealthy. Now, a guy like that wouldn't be writing to me unless it was pretty important, would he, Brooksy? Maybe something dangerous. Maybe frightening. Come on.
What? But, George, you don't even know his name.
I'm not thinking about him, Angel. I'm thinking of crossed envelopes. Of who must have got the letter that was intended for me.
Aunt Beth.
That's right. We have to find her. Think how she'll be feeling when she opens her morning's mail. A little old lady who knits wristlets and who lives in a place called Juniper Lane.
Sure it's Juniper Lane, Bud. What'd you think it was? Barclay Square?
Well, at first we didn't even realize it was right here in the city.
Bounded on the north by Industrial Street, on the south by Noise, Gasworks to the east, and the west is too smoky.
Yeah, I get the idea. Is Juniper Lane just one block long?
It's a dead end. Dead at both ends.
Now, you own the only store on this street. The rest are all brownstones. So maybe you've heard of somebody's Aunt Bess.
Everybody's Aunt Bess.
What? Huh?
Bess. Botwell, the good Queen Bess, used to run a millinery shop. Always claimed she made a hat for Queen Mary.
Well, go on.
Yeah, great little lady. Lives at the head of the street, number one. Aunt Bess owns Juniper Lane, Mac.
Well, come on, Brooksy. Let's visit the Queen Bee.
Mr. Valentine, Felix McCoy, the cigar man, has been with us for years. He's so kind to the children.
Yeah, sure. Kind to his mother, too, I bet. But look, Miss Botwell...
I'm sure you have nice points. Everyone does.
Miss Boswell, what we really came to see you about...
And you too, my dear. You too. In the world outside, it is different, I'm told. And that's very tragic, and I weep about it sometimes. I can't help it. But somehow the tears come out happy in Juniper Lane. And then I find myself laughing because...
Miss Botwell, all I came here to ask you was
how could you understand about Juniper Lane? You've never seen the tree, have you?
Look, would you...
What tree, Miss Botwell?
Why, the juniper tree, of course. It used to be on the street, but now it's on the window. I put it there. You...
On the window?
Yes, of course. I'll show you. It's much nicer. There. I painted it there on the glass. It's the greenest tree in the city. That's what I'm told, though I've never been there. There were lots of trees on this street long ago.
Miss Bothwell, it's a beautifully painted juniper, all right, but may we talk about your knitting wristlets?
Oh, it's happened again. I might have known when you came in asking for Miss Bothwell. But I like to pretend I have friends, too. That I am important, too. And though I don't really want to be. It's my sister who knits, Mr. Valentine. It's Beth. She's the wonderful one.
Oh. Well, may I see her, please?
Of course. She's in here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, but this is her bedroom. She's not even awake yet.
No, no, my dear. It's quite all right. Beth is dead.
While she was sleeping.
It's difficult to keep your mind on things sometimes.
George, what was it? Is there anything...
Her neck. She's been stabbed.
Yes. The knitting needle. I saw that just a few moments ago. I thought she was asleep, too. Oh, I'm so glad you came, Mr. Valentine. I've been all alone here, just staring at the juniper tree. Just wondering what to do.
Clues! Clues! What do you mean, clues?
Oh, take it easy, will you, Lieutenant? What time did the doctor say she died?
Sometime before midnight last night. But look here. Her room's at the head of the stairs. And the front door down there is always left open. And in this neighborhood yet.
So anybody could have walked in, picked up the needle there?
Yes, yes, and the whole street was here last night. The whole street playing homage to good Queen Bess.
What do you mean?
I mean paying rent. The old biddy sat here collecting rent from everyone who lives in this... Valentine, I never even heard of this street before. This relic, this down at the heels.
Yeah, the kind of a place you get unsolved crimes, I know.
Yeah, there's nothing to go on. And that wacky sister, Miss Bothwell, sitting in there, won't talk about anything except how nice old Bess was. How nice Felix is.
Hey, Riley, you know what wristlets are?
Eh?
Well, there's nothing to go on except one thing. Nobody to help us except one person.
Yeah? Who?
My letter, Riley. Don't forget it. My letter. And it's my hunch we better find the guy who wrote it.
In this closed-mouthed bunch of... Oh, look, we've already gone through Bess's mail looking for that letter you should have got.
Let's find the guy, Riley. He must have wanted help. He must know something. And all we have to do is look for somebody around here who got wristlets for Christmas.
George.
Oh, it's no use, Angel. Queen Bess always gave everyone in Juniper Lane wristlets for Christmas.
George, come here. Down these steps. Basement apartment.
Yeah?
Listen.
Listen to the man. That's all you are. Holding out your trays, my good and faithful servants. Don't you answer me. No, don't you ever answer me. Without food, you won't speak. You never speak. Rusty, dumb, the butler of my bidding... You're laughing at me, aren't you? Laughing at...
Brooks,
oh, I don't blame
servant.
You. I blame
butler,
me.
In the thank you letter, remember? Come on.
Well, and to what do I owe the honor of this intrusion? Income tax, census, the Fuller Brush Company,
The name's George Valentine.
Oh, I'd about given you up, Mr. Valentine. Come in, come in.
Your letter got crossed, but you are the one who wrote to us, aren't... Oh.
What troubles you, young lady?
Well, there's nobody here. We heard you talking to... Oh.
Printing presses. Two old-fashioned printing presses.
Permit me, the butler and the maid.
Oh. Newspapers all over the floor. The Juniper Lane shopping news.
But look at the date. July 2nd, 1916. Yeah.
The last beautiful days of Pompeii. Look at the artwork on the heading. There were trees on our street then, you see. Stores and children. Even a newspaper published by a young fool.
Stevenson Sproat, editor. That's you, huh?
Stevenson Sproat, part-time printer of greeting cards, occasional racing sheets of bills due for the Queen. My two faithful servants here. Oh, stop looking at me that way. I talk to them because I'm lonely. You talk to yourself when you're driving a car, don't you?
Yeah, okay, Mr. Sproat.
I'm sour. I'm old. I have been sick, that's all.
Well, why did you write to us in the first place, Mr. Sproat? We didn't get your letter, you know.
Oh, so that's it. Mr. Valentine, do you know what it's like to be a conscience? To be alone, to... helplessly watch the steady march of rack and ruin.
Look, don't get carried away. Just tell
us
what...
Oh, yes, yes, yes. The murder. That's all everyone's talking about. The Queen is dead. The Queen was a knave, tyrant, bloodsucker, hypocrite. Out to make as much money out of Juniper Lane as she could. That was what my letter was about.
So you can help us. You do know something about...
About the danger of Aunt Beth being killed. Of course I do. A copy of what I wrote you here someplace. Of course I can help. Oh, here. Now, you listen. Dear Mr. Valentine, you must hurry to prevent a crime. There is a woman in Juniper Lane who is hated by everyone, who is in constant danger of being murdered. But there is one man whom I know for a fact has been planning her death for years. At all costs, he must be stopped before it is too late. That man is me.
We'll return to tonight's adventure of George Valentine in just a moment. A man doesn't have to lift the hood of his car to keep it running, naturally. He can put some gas in the tank, forget all about the vital parts under the hood, and his car will run all right for a while. But if you want both safety and savings for your own car, it's wise to have your station man look under the hood regularly. At standard stations and at independent Chevron gas stations, the underhood checkup is part of their protective service. That's when they catch a worn fan belt or a leaky radiator hose, things that might lead to major repair bills. Another example is regular oil check. Maybe 9 times out of 10, they'll tell you your oil is at the safe level. But when fresh new oil is needed to avoid costly engine damage, that's when protective service pays its own way many times over. A few minutes of your time tomorrow for an underhood checkup may save you hours of delay and expense the day after. So why not stop at an independent Chevron gas station or at a standard station where they say and mean... we take better care of your car. And now, back to tonight's adventure of George Valentine. Juniper Lane, a few good people, a few bad, a little excitement Saturday night. Oh, yes, and if you live on Juniper Lane, you get a pair of knitted brown wristlets once a year. Doesn't sound important, does it? Well, if your name is George Valentine, you're no longer asking questions and looking for wristlets and wondering about this one-block-long street lost in the middle of the city. Now you have begun to find out. And according to Lieutenant Riley, you found out quite enough.
Well, it's plenty good for me, Valentine. Plenty good for me.
Well, of course, Mr. Sproat had the opportunity.
Miss Brooks, but... he not only had the opportunity, he had the time and the inclination. And besides, he told you he was going to kill Aunt Bess in that letter to you that got lost, didn't he?
Yeah, that's what he said, all right. But he's not saying much now, are you, Mr. Sproat?
A man is supposed to be cautious of what he says at a time like this, isn't he? But
fairly obviously I'm your man, and I assure you it doesn't make much difference what happens to me.
Yes, yes. Now, look, friend, you hated that old dame, didn't you?
She cheated me, Lieutenant. Out of the only business I ever loved, my little pretentious neighborhood shopping news. It went broke in 1916. She made it go broke. She couldn't stand anyone else making money but her.
Good Queen Beth.
Ever hear anyone else call her that but Felix McCoy? I suppose he's made a little money.
Yeah, we know all that.
Nobody else has. It's a street full of has-beens. The Queen was always there to loan money and to pull the drawstrings or boost the rent or twist somebody's arm. Juniper Lane. Like a bunch of rats biting each other. The only one who, not infected, who can still see the tree is Miss Bothwell, her sister. But she has to paint the tree on her window.
All right. All right, Miss Bothwell ruined you and you did something about it. Come on. We can fill out a confession down at headquarters.
No, I don't believe I'll do that.
Hmm?
I didn't kill her, you know.
But you what? You didn't, but you've been saying you've been as good as admitting...
Lieutenant, I may have.
Huh?
It's just that... Well, I might as well have, I said. I've been brooding about it for years.
And you wanted Valentine to stop you from doing it, you said.
Well, of course I wanted him to stop me. Have you ever known what it feels like to commit murder?
There, you just admitted.
Or to feel like you wanted to?
Have I? Oh, brother, may I say...
Wait a minute, hold it, Riley. Let me, will you? Now, Mr. Sproat, you're not quite sure what happened last night, are you?
Oh, please, I'm very tired, but I'm not really...
You're all mixed up, yeah. You've thought about it so long that you're not quite sure whether you did or you didn't do it.
I wish you'd take me down and get it over with.
To make you feel better for wishing her dead? There's no concrete evidence against you, you know. A man doesn't like to admit to this kind of confusion, but... Well, you can't honestly remember last night, can you?
No, I've been drinking a bit. But who else, Mr. Valentine? What if I don't think I really did it? When all's said and done, who hated her as much as I?
Well, don't just stand there, Valentine. Let's keep looking. Juniper Lane, oh my. Miss Bothwell, please, please, you still haven't once mentioned a single thing that happened here last
night.
But
how could I, Lieutenant, when I wasn't even here?
What's that?
Poor Stevenson's cold has been so bad, you know, and I never could enjoy those people tramping in and out, looking unhappy.
Wait a minute, you were with Mr. Sproat last night?
Of course, to take him a good book and perhaps play a game of pinochle to cheer him up a bit. He's really my only friend, my only close friend here. Faces have changed.
But he never once mentioned it.
How sweet of him. He only mumbled a word or two. He was so tired. So I tidied up a bit and put his bottle away, and then I read the book myself.
Until when?
Oh, no later than 1 or 2 o'clock. Oh, well, there's nothing wrong in it. A woman of my age.
And the doc said she died before midnight. Oh, Valentine, now the barn door's really wide open.
My, what a nice expression.
Hey, wait a minute. My letter, Riley.
Hmm?
It was sitting there on the hall table. Anybody walking in or out of the house could have seen it, right? Seen it and maybe capitalized on what we know was in it.
Yeah. Sproat's worry about killing her, sure. Blame it on him and he'd make a good fall guy. Only how in the name
George,
of...
Yeah, Brooksy.
Come here. The bills, those collections Beth was making last night. They were by her bed.
Yeah?
I checked them against the police list of the neighborhood, and there's only one name that's missing that there's no bill for.
Yeah?
If his bill is missing, then he might have been the last one up here.
Who?
Felix McCoy.
But what did I say wrong, Lieutenant? That Felix McCoy was Beth's husband? So why should she send him a bill? Oh, really, sometimes it's very confusing.
Your sister was actually married to that small time.
It was all so long ago that no one remembers. She never even took his name. I hate scandal, don't you?
Oh, Mother McCree.
They did admire one another in a business sense. I haven't even remembered their marriage for years. But now you've made me think about
it. Take it easy, Miss Bothwell.
And made me think about her being dead. I hadn't thought about her being dead yet. Like all the greenery that used to be along. Juniper Lane.
Pretty late. He's probably in bed by now.
Well, this outside stairway will take us to McCoy's apartment. It's on the second floor.
You know, George, it would make a lot more sense if it's a person like Felix McCoy.
Yeah.
This property Beth owned around here must be worth a good deal. Look. There he is.
Hmm?
You can see him through the window.
Sleeping like a baby.
George, the door just opened over there.
It's hard to see.
There's somebody standing there, moving toward the bed.
Come on. How do you get into this place? Balcony door's locked.
George, there's a knife. He's going to stab him.
Stand back.
Hey, you stop.
Hey, it's too late. There's the knife. Wiley,
get it. Slow down, will you?
Well, I'll be... Well, look what bounced back at us, Valentine.
All right. You don't have to keep your knee in my stomach.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. I'm not going anyplace.
Not this time you're not, Mr. Sproat. Felix dead?
Yeah, Raleigh.
Well, this time I won't be begging for confessions. Come on, get up.
Take it easy, Riley. He didn't kill him.
Eh?
What's that, Mr. Valentine?
Felix looks like he's been dead for several hours. Only shot to death. Yeah, Riley, this gun was lying here on the floor. Whoever did it pumped all six shells into Felix, then pulled up the blanket.
Juniper Lane, the whole place is crazy.
Yeah, that's been bothering me, too.
Yeah. I mean, like Sproat in there with Miss Brooks. He knew where we were, yet he came up here to stab Felix.
Felix was Bess's husband, long time ago, but I suppose it still sticks.
I'm not sure I like the way it ties together, but it does, and it all points to Miss Bothwell. Sproat, come on in here.
Go ahead, sit down, Mr. Sproat.
Now look, my fanatic friend. You hated Aunt Bess, but you didn't hate Felix here, did you?
No, he didn't.
Come on, answer me. You came wandering up here to kill him. Now, you didn't care whether you were caught or not. Why? All right, I'll tell you why if you'll answer just one question. Who were you with last night till after 1 o'clock?
What's that?
Were you with somebody in Wide Awake playing pinochle?
Why, yes, I...
Or, did you fall asleep earlier after a drink and, maybe somebody brought you a book?
Well...
Look, it's no use, Mr. Sproat. You don't even know where you were supposed to have been. You haven't even heard the story she made up yet. That alibi she made up for herself.
Lieutenant...
You're not helping Miss Bothwell anymore. You're a big, noble guy. You knew there wasn't any evidence on the first murder, so you figured that if you got caught for the second one, you'd hang for them both.
My life is worth very little, Lieutenant, but she...
Sure. In your own mind, you'd be the hero who got rid of the Wicked Witch of Juniper Lane and her shakedown husband. Only I've got a job to do, my friend.
I have nothing to say.
I'd like to talk to Mr. Sproat alone, Riley.
Huh?
So go on over to Miss Bothwell's place, will you? I'll meet you there.
Okay, I've got all I need.
Now, what can either one of you expect me to say, Mr. Valentine? Miss Bothwell is my friend, my only friend.
I wouldn't waste any time with any of that Juniper Lane stuff, Sproat. That brooding about murder.
What's that, Mr. Valentine?
Well, Lieutenant Riley swallowed it, hook, line, and sinker. And why? Because it would never occur to anybody that a guy would be crazy or smart enough to stab a body that he'd already shot.
Well, what are you talking about?
Now, just stay where you are. To start out with, you mixed up a couple of letters, only you mixed them on purpose. You wanted me to walk into this thing to meet poor Miss Bothwell to get the setting. The Juniper Lane malarkey that doesn't exist except in her mind and in the stuff you fed me.
Well, I don't understand. Her sister, Bess...
Bess was an old biddy. Probably no better and no worse than a lot of other people. Felix here was a tramp, but even he had his points. But they had dough, didn't they? Yeah. That's what it was all about, Sproat. Simple, hard dough.
Mr. Valentine...
I said stay where you are. This is a gun you're looking at, mister. Remember it? The gun we found here, so don't come any closer. Okay, step one. You kill the old biddy. Her next heir was a half-forgotten husband. Step two, you kill him.
You don't know what you're talking about. There's nothing you can prove.
Step three. You kill Felix again and get caught. So the whole thing will hang where you want it to hang, on the next heir to the money, Bess's sister. And you, her noble, her only friend, would get that money about the time Miss Bothwell went to the chair or an asylum. Now stand still, I said. Who else would she leave her money to but someone who tried to save her?
I've heard enough, Mr. Valentine.
You picked a nice little lady for a fall guy. So peculiar she could never defend herself.
I suppose you're different. I'm in better physical shape than you might think, Mr. Valentine.
You won't be if you get one step closer. I'm warning you.
You're just guessing, my friend. There is no evidence. I'll get you. I've got a knife.
Yeah. It was just a guess until now. Until you did something no man in the world is brave enough to do. You kept walking straight toward the gun that did away with Felix McCoy. When only his murderer would know the gun's harmless. That all the six shells had been fired.
Oh, you don't.
But the other end of the gun worked all right, didn't it, Mr. Sprout?
Quite sure.
Please, Miss Bothwell, that alibi for Mr. Sproat wasn't true, was it? It's the only thing that doesn't fit.
Oh, it wasn't very nice of me to lie. But he asked me to.
Yeah, sure, we understand.
Do you? You're so much younger than I. You have so much more time left to understand about the world.
The world is just the same as your street, Miss Bothwell.
No, it isn't. There's no place like Juniper Lane. It must be perfect. And everyone in it must be good. That's why I lied for Mr. Sprout.
Mm-hmm.
Is it wrong for a lonely old woman to fool herself? I know that I painted that tree there myself, Mr. Valentine. But if you stand right here, the tree's on the curve. And if you stand over here, farther down.
Sure. All the trees you want in Juniper Lane. Well, you stick to making believe, Miss Bothwell. It's nice.
Sometimes during winter driving, maybe you have the feeling that your car has lost its pep. Last summer, it ran beautifully. Now it starts hard, acts logy in traffic, drags on hills. Maybe it's the gasoline you're using. But just try Chevron Supreme gasoline. It's climate-tailored. Based on year-round weather reports from your driving area, this premium-quality gasoline is tailored to meet seasonal variations. And it is further tailored to meet the requirements of the West's different altitude and temperature zones. Try a tank full of Chevron Supreme tomorrow. Right away, you'll notice how much better your car responds. Faster start, smoother pickup in traffic, ping-free power on hills. In fact, you can't buy a better gasoline for today's high-compression engines. Get Chevron Supreme at standard stations and independent Chevron gas stations where they say and mean, we take better care of your car. Tonight's adventure of George Valentine has been brought to you by Standard Oil Company of California on behalf of independent Chevron gas stations and Standard stations throughout the West. Robert Daly is starred as George. Let George Do It is written by David Victor and Jackson Gillis and directed by Don Clark. Virginia Gregg appeared as Brooksy, Wally Mayer as Lieutenant Riley. Bob Griffin was heard as Sproat, Lorene Tuttle as Miss Bothwell, and Herb Butterfield as Felix. The music is composed and presented by Eddie Dunstetter, your announcer, John Heaston. Listen again next week, same time, same station, to Let George Do It. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Thank you. That's it for Case Closed this week. Hope you enjoyed our selections this time. You can, of course, find more from Sherlock Holmes, Let George Do It, and thousands of other old-time radio episodes at relicradio.com. Past episodes from Case Closed, all the other podcasts, our Shoutcast stream, is all made possible by your donations. If you'd like to help support this and all of the shows, visit donate.relicradio.com for more information. Got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though anything is always appreciated. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another hour of Case Closed.